The emotional pressure was unbearable. Pearl never knew if today would be her last. In time, her sickness affected both her body and her mind. "I am unable to enjoy life as a normal woman should," she wrote dully. The doctors told her she belonged to a class of women of which the medical profession does not know the reason for their illness. She was treated for malaria, anemia, and other conditions. The doctor's guesses were especially frustrating for Pearl because she had been trained as a nurse. She knew none of the theories was right, but she was at a loss as to what could be the true cause. By the April of 1933, Pearl had become desperate. "I notified my doctor of more bleeding," she remembered, "and he advised the removal of the uterus. I refused and lay in bed for several days, debating what to do." A hysterectomy. It would mean the end of her dreams for more children. No, she thought, no, not yet. She needed more time, more hope. She called in other doctors, had other treatment, hoping for a different outcome. But it was all to no avail. "In July 1933, she wrote numbly, "I was completely sterilized." Pearl was heartbroken. "I was attacked by severe heart and sinking spells," she recalled. As she read of the radium poisoning cases in Ottawa, she grasped that her devastating condition might prove fatal, but at least she had an explanation. "I believed," she wrote of her case, "that radium had attached to the tissue of certain organs, causing them to be destroyed through tumorous growth." She decided to get in touch with her old friend, Catherine Donoghue. The two women, who were very similar in nature, now became extremely close. Not long after, Pearl joined the fight for justice. The lawsuit was gaining momentum. The women were gaining friends. In Chicago, however, Joseph Kelly, president of Radium Dial, was finding the opposite. By October 1934, perhaps in light of the lawsuits, he had clean run out of friends in his company. An executive called William Ganley wrested control of Radium Dial, and Kelly and his associates were voted out. "There were very hard feelings," recalled one company officer, "because of the corporate shenanigans that went on." But, Kelly had decided, he was not finished with Ottawa. Every current dial painter at Radium Dial now received a letter. Mr. Turner, a manager at the plant under Mr. Reed, invited them all to a restaurant where they were fed while he talked to them. He had an announcement. A new dial painting business was going to be opening in town, and he had a question. "How about you highly skilled girls join us at Luminous Processes?" It seems the women weren't told it would be run by Joseph Kelly and Rufus Fordyce, who'd had charge of Radium Dial during the radium poisoning scandal. They were told something extraordinary, though. Mr. Turner informed them that earlier dial painters had died because they put the brushes in their mouths, and since brush licking was no longer permitted, exposure to radium would not be harmful. It was an admission of guilt, but the original dial painters never got to hear of it. The new studio opened just a few blocks over from Radium Dial, in a two-story red brick warehouse. Thanks to the clandestine meeting in the restaurant, most of the dial painters moved across, thinking the new operation safe. They applied paint using handheld sponges and wooden spatulas, using fingers to smooth it over, and wore thin cotton smocks to give them some protection from the dust.